brighter and surpass the auspicious ones, such as Mercury, Jupiter, and Venus, as well as a number of lunar mansions. Taking seemingly retrograde courses, the planet came in conflict with one another. Purport by His Divine Grace, Nisi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada. The entire universe is moving under the three modes of material nature. Those living entities who are in goodness are called the pious species, pious lands, pious trees, etc. It is similar with the planets. Also, many planets are considered pious, and others are considered impious. Saturn and Mars are considered impious. When the pious planets shine very brightly, it is an auspicious sign. But when the inauspicious planets shine very brightly, this is not a very good sign. Graham punya tamam anye bhagavans chapi dipitaha atichayur vukragatya virhus cha prasma. Well, these verses are describing the birth of Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. So inauspicious, big demons, and the different omens and inauspicious things that took place at that time. Among them are the inauspicious planets. Saturn, shining, is considered generally inauspicious. So these planets became prominent. The indication here is that they became prominent because of the birth of the demons, rather than the demons were born as a result of the planets being inauspicious, planets being prominent, which is somewhat unusual. Generally, the inauspicious moments then bring about, they influence the atmosphere, they influence the persons, they influence the circumstances. It appears here that the demons were so inauspicious that they even superseded the ordinary course of events, of where the planets precede the inauspicious events. That seems to be what the indication here, by saying that because of their birth, then the inauspicious planets also appeared. Which does give us some indication of how powerful these demons really were. It appears that they were more powerful than the demigods, because it's the demigods who are in charge of the different planets in the universe. And in fact, that's what happened. Hiranyakashipu, for example, and Hiranyaksha, they both became so powerful that they defeated the demigods. The demigods were afraid for their lives. Generally, the demigods are the most powerful in the universe, but occasionally it happens that some demons become very powerful, and then there's difficulties. In this case, these demons are, as most of us know, they're not ordinary demons. They're actually devotees who fell down from Vaikuntha, or from the gates of Vaikuntha, and were given the option to either be devotees and serve the Lord in the material world for seven births or become demons, and they could only have to stay three births. So they chose to become demons, and demons they became. So powerful that only Vishnu could defeat them. The demigods couldn't even defeat them. Now, some people don't believe in things like influences of stars and planets. But that's ridiculous. How can you say that planets don't have influence when even the moon, when it's the moon controls the tides? How would you explain that? If planets in the sky don't have any influence, then how is it that the moon controls the tides? Maybe Maharaj wanted to speak on that. Could tell us how they could say such a thing.
Oh, I see.
We don't have to speak on that.
Thank you.
Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sita Talamanovistam Stabitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dharati Suvaparantikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasudeva Bhakti Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. These two brothers, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakasipu, were undoubtedly extraordinarily powerful, and they were also very demoniac. Srila Prabhupada explains that these days the demons are not equally powerful as such extraordinary demons like Hiranyakasipu and Hiranyaksha, but that the demoniac mentality is the same. That still, although the demons of today are not so powerful, they're equally ruthless, they have the same materialistic mentality. Just like in the Bhagavad Gita, the demoniac nature is described. And it is described how the demon can see that there is the only cause of life is lust. Kim anyat kama ahetukam. It is said in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. There is no other cause than lust for this world. They also see that Ishvara Aham, Aham Bhogi, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. Siddham, I am very powerful, Palavan Sukhi, I am perfect, I am powerful, I am happy. So they're convinced that on the strength of their own prowess, they will enjoy the material world. Here, the omens are there to indicate the inauspicious appearance of such demoniac personalities. And yes, these omens are very powerful and are indicating extraordinary difficulty. We discussed that in previous days, how amazing it is that demons can even be more powerful than pious personalities. Because it's sort of, if the demons become more powerful than the demigods, that means that the demoniac are subjugating the pious. So those who have actually dedicated their life to upholding principles of Dharma are not being rewarded, but rather are subjugated and are suffering. When we are reading the Ramayana, for example, and we are reading the opening verses, then we find some very demoniac descriptions. We find how Ravana, along with his associates, was flying through the sky, and how they descended upon various sages, attacked these sages, and even devoured some sages, being Rakshasas. So when one reads these kind of things, how is it possible? How is it possible that the demoniac forces are getting so much opportunity? There must be some special cause. Either it is the special desire of the Supreme Lord. There may be an external cause. There may be an offense committed by the demigods, which now fructifies, or something to that effect. Because otherwise, how would it be possible? How would it be possible that the demons would become so powerful? In this case, the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself will appear and will deal with these demons and will show that ultimately he is ready to protect his devotees. The demons of today may equally so be very exploitive, very deceitful, and manipulative, and ruthless, but because they are less powerful, they may act more indirectly, not as openly as Hiranyakasipu and Hiranyaksha did, who could challenge their power. The demons of today are aware that to control the masses, they have to manipulate the masses, because when the masses get out of control, they also have no power to control them. So they are controlling us through misinformation, and this is the present situation. And they systematically provide propaganda that there cannot be a God. How is it possible? How is such a thing? How can one even think such a thing? Like, how can you even think that planets have an influence upon consciousness and all such thing? How can one even think like that? Right. Yes. Of course, there may be a physical influence on the tides, on the water, but these are simply magnetic forces that are there. See? Yes, yes. These are absolutely, this has nothing to do with some sort of supernatural influence. Just like recently, some scientists went to some of these famous ghost places in England, these very well-known places. And they just figured out that actually all the noises in those buildings have nothing to do with supernatural beings. Yes. These are simply the result of the rotational forces of the earth. which have their effect within the building, and they create certain forces within the building, and that creates sounds and noises and so on, right?
People
and
dragging sounds of people dragging
rattling sounds simply due to the rotation of the earth, like that, right? And I remember that one professor presented to us that the concept of any afterlife, that of anything in the supernatural realm which people are again and again trying to create for their own comfort, is like, has absolutely no scientific basis. They've investigated so many cases and just found it all a hoax. There's basically no evidence of an afterlife. It's all based on sentimental belief, which is of course nice and comforting for those who need that kind of illusory shelter. Probably because if we look back in their childhood, there are some irregularities, and such kind of people join religious sects and so on, and then present mythology as fact. Right? And with that, I think that we have put Mr. Swami in the right perspective, where he belongs, a sentimentalist, one who believes in mythological stories as fact, and I think we can all understand what a pathetic condition it is, I'm sorry to say. Maybe, for all fairness sake, Mr. Swami would like to answer to all that, you know, but of course, we can appreciate that probably he won't have much to say. Thank you very much.
One thing is that we're speaking about evidence and proof of some information that's being presented as factual, scientific. So we would then have to ask, what is the scientific basis for the statement that everything comes from a void? What is the mathematical principle that you can explain that the whole universe and all existence comes out of a void, which is your present? That's the theory that you're presenting, the Big Bang theory. I guess maybe I can. That would be because you're saying that that the principle of supernatural or a higher force doesn't make any sense, but you haven't explained how everything comes into being, where it comes from, how it's going on, how did it... Of course, you try to explain that the different magnetic forces and things, but if you actually understood how they were happening, you would be able to also reproduce them. That's one of the principles of a scientific proven fact, is that it can be reproduced. It can be observed, and the experiment can be done by not just one person who privately does it and then says, I did it, but no one else can do it. It has to be reproducible. So if you say that all the workings of the universe are some working under some magnetic or some other forces, you should be able to reproduce them and show us how that happens. But in fact, of course, there's no such thing as reproducing a creation of the universe. So therefore, it's not scientific. It's simply a guessing. And guessing, you could say, is as good as mythology. Let's be in the same category, putting forward some guesses about what happened and making things up. So, as far as the influence of the different astrological alignments, still, of course, some people don't believe in these things. That planets and stars can have an influence on the future.
Crystal ball.
When Srila Prabhupada was born, they did an astrological chart, and they said that when he reaches, he'll become a sannyasi. When he reaches the age of 70, he'll cross the sea and become a religious preacher and open 108 temples. So I guess you would have an explanation for how that actually took place and how that prediction, which was done right at his birth, could be so accurate. Maybe if we just keep it here, we can kind of just keep it right here.
Yeah, I think one of the first phenomenon that we are perceiving in the presentation is that it's not linear, it's not systematic, it's not logic, it's not step by step, but rather it's like some quick, we heard some quick dramatic statements about unrelated topics, so, and not directly speaking on the topic. Still, we will try to respond. So, as far as the Big Bang theory being presented as a theory that explains the origin of the universe, that is a total misrepresentation of what the theory actually implies. Because the theory is by no means a theory that is dealing with the origin of the universe. Simply, the theory is based on measured facts that have been observed systematically, where it has been noted that the planets or the various luminaries within the sky are expanding in their distances, in their orbits, in a particular direction. And this expansion is measurable. That is all. It's been recorded. I mean, even like very basic information, is widely available in the Encyclopedia Britannica. Anyone can read it at home nowadays, right there on his own home computer. So this is like in the realm of popular science. Right? However, in the true scientific sense, that is not an explanation of the origin. There are many, many theories about the origin of the universe. One of those theories is that the universe is simply cyclic, and that as we are seeing the expansion, that expansion leads to contraction, since we must consider Einstein's curvature within the universe, then we understand that in this way, matter that expands will at one point again return to a point and then again expand. In this way, simply an ongoing cycle that doesn't even require a origin. That is one understanding. Therefore, the origin question is presupposing that there is an origin, which may be there, may not be there. In other words, that question is not as relevant as it may appear to be. Many other topics were presented, but let us just go back to the main original topic on the floor, which was the influence of the luminaries in the sky. And, our Mr. Swami has presented a...
Dr.
Swami. which is interesting to me that our Swami is a doctor at the same time, because it sort of appears that his faith is not as deep in his own tradition as he is externally projecting, right? It's interesting that he needs to somehow or other actually go to our universal education to add to his status. But besides that point, let us just address the real argument. The real argument being this so-called astrological proof. A horoscope has been made and has predicted the proof very perfectly. As there have been millions of horoscopes that have been made that have completely missed the boat. Right? How many predictions have we heard of the end of the world that is near, or that a tip of California would fall off and it's still there today? What to speak of Nostradamus or so many other of such kind of mystics, prophecies, whatever you want to call it. All of them have simply, most of them have failed. That there are maybe some success cases in predictions can be. There are some good psychologists amongst astrologers who are catering to the need of their questioners, and in this way present that they are simply reading into what is being desired. So naturally, in Bengal, it was not such an uncommon thing at that time that people desired a great spiritual future for their son. The parents came, had a great hope that their son would become a big spiritual leader, and so the predictions were given according to the desires of the parents. The parents have pushed the child to fulfill that prediction, and in fact the whole horoscope became like a script, and the person just acted it out nicely and then fulfilled it, and lo and behold, a miracle, a prediction. Just see, we are sorry, but it is a nice coincidence, but we cannot accept that as evidence. Thank you.
Thank you.
They must be very thorough when we come to evidence.
You mentioned in your talk, you mentioned Einstein. So Einstein said that when we study the universe, we can understand there's a big brain behind the universe. What would you like to say on that?
I think in science, see, we are simply taking the merit of the words of a person. So if a person makes a particular statement, that we take, we judge that particular statement, doesn't mean that we will buy into the person and his beliefs in total. That is more a religious approach, where one immediately begins to idolize a person. We are simply approaching Einstein as a scientist and taking his theories, and some of them we find we agree with, and some of them we may not. We certainly don't agree with his religious beliefs. That was his own private concern, and certainly not scientific.
He was the man of the century. In other words, in the last 100 years, he was considered the number one top man, and he is considered the epitome of your whole science. So many theories that he came up with have. So for you to discount him, I think is quite odd, because you haven't done anything on the level that he has. You're certainly not as famous. No one even knows your name. And for you to say, to simply brush aside the statement in such a eminent scientist, who I think practically all the scientists would say is superior to you. So how is it that you can simply brush him aside, his statement that he made, that there is a great brain behind the universe? That there's, in other words, he studied very carefully, and he found that there is too much order, too much systematic design within the universe, that it simply could not have been produced and maintained without a great brain. There's too much evidence that he found that supported the view that there must be a intelligent working. Also, Newton. You've heard of Newton? He once made a small model of the solar system, and that if you turned a crank, then the planets would go around in their orbits. And one of his atheistic associates came in and said, "Oh, this is quite a nice little invention. Who made it?" And Newton said, "No one made it, it just appeared." And he said, "No, don't be silly. Someone must have made it. Things like this don't just happen." And Newton said, "No, it just appeared." He said, "Now don't play games with me. I'm a scientist. Things like this, it requires intelligence. Look, you can see the crank, you can see the planet going around in their proper orbit. Could not have happened by accident." And Newton said, "But you say the whole universe, the whole solar system happened by accident. But even this little model you say couldn't happen by accident."
Well, there always will be someone who will make a case for the existence of God based on a design argument. And in the history of the last thousands of years, we have see many rationalists who have also presented the flaws of such views. So we're ending in we're winding up with a debate, which is just a repetition of a millennia-old debate, and it is clear that there are many flaws in the design arguments. In science, the basic approach is different than in religion. For example, if the Pope makes a statement, the believers will accept. The world will accept. If a guru says the sky is green, the believers will say the sky is green. But in science, that spirit is just not there. It doesn't matter who makes a statement. Every statement will only be accepted if there is a body of proof presented. So simply because Einstein and Newton came up with good theories, which they underbuilt nicely about various aspects of physics, doesn't mean that they came up with any reasonable arguments for the existence of God. So far, the religionists have failed to prove the existence of God, and that issue remains. What can we do? Keep on trying, but up to the day of today, no one has actually proven that God exists. So, what is your system for proving that God exists?
He's existing, and those who are qualified are able to perceive his existence. He's not, like he says in Bhagavad Gita, Bhavam Prakasha Sarvasya Yogamaya Samavita Mudho Yam. You know, heard that word? Mudho Yam Abhijanati Loko Yamaja Bhavayam. That I am never manifest to the fools and unintelligent. For them I am always covered by my potency. And the foolish persons can never understand me. So we would have to say that those who cannot see the influence or the workings of God, at least by his statement, are in the category of fools. And Einstein and Newton, who are your top scientists, they don't go into the category of fools because they recognize that there was a supreme intelligence behind the universe. But others amongst the, you could say, wannabe scientists. The wannabe scientists...
Okay.
Hawkins changes his theories every few weeks.
It's like
sometimes he says one thing, sometimes he contradicts himself. It's something completely different.
That's ad hominem.
Well, you're ad hominem. You're finding fault. You're saying that God doesn't exist. That's ad hominem also. You're saying he's simply a phantom that doesn't have any reality. And there's no reason to say such a thing. Besides that, you might discount not only the evidence of your own scientists, but there are others who have personally talked with God and have come back and among us and written books and spoken about it, but you would also discount it. But that is not scientific. In other words, if someone who's a witness, an honorable person, gives testimony that I have spoken with this, or I've seen that, then how can you discount that evidence unless you have better counter evidence?
Of course.
In this case,
absolutely.
So many persons who have personally seen God, talked with God, have given evidence.
They're locked up.
And they're not locked up.
In a mental asylum.
Certainly not. They're honored by the greatest personalities in the world. Their books have been studied for thousands and millions of years. Persons like Brahma, persons like Narada, persons like Vyasa, they've all seen God, spoken with God. Not only that, but God has even come to the earth himself and revealed himself. And this is all very nicely presented in Mahabharata, in Srimad Bhagavatam. And you're probably not even aware of these books. And yet, you would like us to believe that you're a scientific scholar. You're simply unaware of these things. So, this is science. Krishna lifted the Govardhan hill for 7 days and nights with one hand and saved all the inhabitants of Vrindavan. And Indra was the king of heaven. Have you heard of Indra? Have you heard of Indra?
Yes.
Okay. So Indra, the king of heaven, was in charge of all the rain and the clouds and things like that. He personally came on his elephant, Aravata, and they poured down so much rain and hail on the inhabitants of Vrindavan. And so Krishna just lifted up a mountain. And then after that, 7 days, then Indra, he bowed down. He bowed down and paid his obeisances to child Krishna and begged his forgiveness.
Beautiful story.
So this is...
I'll tell it to my children at bedtime.
Yes.
Fairy tales. They love fairy tales.
Well, this is given by Vyasadeva. He's considered the greatest authority. He's given so much valuable information, and so many great personalities have accepted it. So, for you to just discount this, or to not accept it, is not very scientific. You haven't taken it and really examined it. You see, you probably don't even believe that there is such a personality as Indra.
Well, to speak of Vyasadeva, there's no proof that there's such a person as Vyasadeva.
Absolutely. I mean, the whole concept that there is one writer of the Vedas named Vyasadeva is obviously ridiculous. And the dating of all these scriptures really doesn't match the so-called dating of this Vyasadeva and so on. The whole thing is totally not scientific, not based on actual verification of facts, just parroting some information and so on. What to say? I think that in our debate that we should just look at how many people are supporting the different views that we are presenting. And it is very clear and noticeable that as soon as people became a little more educated and rose above the level of primitives. Right? Immediately, you know, like who are just believing that there are beings riding around and elephants in the sky, and so on, controlling the weather and all this. But as soon as people became a little more educated, all those men on elephants throwing thunderbolts around, whether it is Indra or Donar or this one or that one, or, you know, it doesn't matter. These are all simply, these beings were immediately delegated to the realm of mythology, stories, which I tell my children at bedtime, and they like it a lot. They appreciate it. But really, nothing that belongs on the level of an educated adult. Fortunately, we're seeing that as education is on the rise in the world, thank God, religion is on the decline. Right? And this is what I call progress. This is what I call progress. We are finally freeing the world from this very suffocating grip of religion, which has oppressed people for many, many millennia, and finally in modern times, we are becoming sober, we are becoming genuine, we are beginning to develop a lifestyle which is accommodating human nature. And unfortunately, we are still facing some dinosaurs, some living time warps, who are still trying to present the same religious views of thousands of years ago with the same religious fervor and fanaticism as them. And what can we say? It's just sentimentalism and fanaticism. What to do? But let the people of the world judge. It is very clear. Religion is in a minority today.
Thank you, but there's still some major problems that you have to face, and that is that all of your theories have never been proven. The Big Bang theory has never been proven. Darwin's theory has never been proven. The idea of that the distance of the galaxies has never been proven. There's not one shred of proven evidence for the theory of life coming from matter. Unfortunately, all of your theories have never been proven, but you have unceremoniously presented them as being facts in the universities and the schools. You're teaching the children. This is great cheating that you have done. You have perpetrated a horrible offense. This is actually a very serious offense, because you've presented something that has no proof, and you've presented it in the name of science. That it's scientific fact, when actually it's never been proven. So, I would like to end at this point that because you have not seen God, or you have not been able to perceive God, certainly doesn't indicate that he doesn't exist or that he cannot be perceived, because there are many who have perceived him and who do perceive him, and he reveals himself to those who are qualified. Unfortunately, because you deal in presenting lies to the public, you present things as if they're factual when there is no evidence at all. We cannot expect that you would be able to perceive God. But nevertheless, if you chant the holy name of God, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, then even though your life has up till now been completely misused, you will be able to, the Lord will reveal himself to you, and then you'll be able to understand everything. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.
I've seen the light. I surrender to Anavya Goswami.
Yeah, I have questions to Mr. Scientist. Yeah, I used to also have a good faith to nowadays science and like that, but nowadays my faith is sacred. Since I have seen a couple convincing documents that universities, they're actually following this very same dogmatic approach what you are claiming to Mr. Swami. Many kinds of evidence is found that they only present, they only follow this teaching for the previous scientists had. And if the new evidence is opposing to the previous theories, they are not accepted to the teachings. Even some people have been thrown out from the universities if the information doesn't fit to the teachings. So can you maybe try to dispel these doubts of mine?
Well, you know, I think that in all fairness, when we look at universities, they are educational institutions, and they provide facility for academics to develop scientific evidence in various fields. It is natural that certain experts in a field postulate their views, and that subsequently others may present opposing theories. If those opposing theories are not of, like, found to be of a caliber that can be recognized by many experts in the field, then naturally such theories will not be taken serious. But if a theory, an opposing theory to any existing scientific worldview is strongly and scientifically presented, then certainly it will be accepted. There is no doubt. I think it is really too much to try and question the integrity of science. I think that from an objective point of view, I think there are scientists who are sincere in their scientific endeavors to try and be faithful to the truth as it can be measured, without a doubt. And even if there are within science some irregularities, still that core still stands. Right? So that is the essence.
Maybe I could also make a comment.
I think we have to go back again and compare your views to the views of Einstein and Newton. They are recognized great scientists by the whole scientific world. And you said that when great scientists, after studying, they come to their conclusions, then people accept it. So many around the world, people have accepted that there is God, and this is supported by Einstein and Newton. And you have not done anything nearly as noteworthy as Einstein and Newton. Therefore, for you to discredit them is not only unscientific, you have no evidence, but it's also very insulting and it's bad etiquette. So I think we would be better off to accept the conclusion of persons like Einstein and Newton, who are recognized by your profession, and rather you should keep quiet and not try to disrespect such persons who are greater than you. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.
We can stop that.
His Holiness Dhanavir Goswami Maharaj ki jai.